everyone. This is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 67, and what this is going to be a recording of the message that I preached at the church in which I pastor, Mount Tabor Baptist Church, this last Sunday. And from Genesis chapter 22, dealing with the testing of Abraham's faith when he was asked to offer up his son by the Lord upon the altar at Mount Moriah. And so it should be a good podcast for you. But before we do that, let me take care of some introductory business. First of all, the affiliate focus for today is envelopes. The reason why I like envelopes is because they have two things that I think are very, very important for your finances. The first is a online management system that works very much like an envelope system. That's why they're called envelopes. And the reason why they work so well is because you are able to designate all of your income to various categories, just as you would on a written piece of paper and or an envelope system, and works great as a budget. And then, of course, it lets you know when you're getting near the end of your envelope and need to refinish it, refurnish it with money or stop spending from that category. So it's a great way to make sure that you are budgeting appropriately. The other reason I like it is because it has a debt snowball built into it. When you enter in various accounts, if they are debt counts, then of course it puts it into a regular debt program, and then you can pay off those faster. It shows you how to do that and accelerate that using the debt stacking or debt snowball program. So it's a fantastic way to manage your money, and of course, if we're going to leave a financial legacy, we need to make sure that we manage our money appropriately. So make sure you check out envelopes. You can do that on the website, legacypodcast.com, and it's in the center right column there. And then also I want to encourage you to make sure that you're registered as a user. That enables you to make comments to each of the podcasts. It also helps you to know when new podcasts are coming out or new episodes or new blogs or whatever it is. Sometimes I post different videos or something like that in between the podcasts. And so if you're only subscribed to the podcast feed, then you don't get to know about those unless you go to the website. So make sure you're going to the website. Best way to know about all the updates is to register as a user. It's free. You can do that on the right column of the website. And then also make sure that you are following us and sharing us on all the various social medias. We've got Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, and make sure that you are liking us on those things and sharing us with your friends and family so that the word gets out. We've had an increase in amount of listeners, which I really appreciate those of you who are listening now. I want to encourage you, though, to subscribe through iTunes. We are really, really low in the iTunes feeds. And so in order for us to move up into a higher ranking when you search for the Legacy Podcast, more people need to subscribe using iTunes. So if you currently are downloading this episode or any of the past episodes, or you plan on downloading any of the future episodes, then I would encourage you to actually register or to subscribe to the iTunes. And that, of course, is if you're using iTunes. If you're not and you're using Sketcher or something like that, then use that regular feed. But there's an iTunes button on the left column, and you can subscribe that way. And that's the best way to move us up. And I appreciate those of you who are doing that. Of course, those of you making comments on iTunes, that's even better. That helps us move up as well. And then finally, if you like what we do, I encourage you to become a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year. With that, you get access to our exclusive page, which has vendor discounts as well as some other free items on there once you're in the system. And then also it enables you to support the show at less than 25 cents an episode. So I appreciate those of you who are doing that, and those of you who will do that, I appreciate it. So with that, this concludes the introductory segment. So let's go ahead now and listen to the message that I preached from Genesis chapter 22. Some of you probably do the same test that we do at our home when something has been in the refrigerator for quite some time. Usually, if there is something in the refrigerator, let's just say milk, and you look at the milk jug and you say, milk's been in there quite a while. Maybe if you bought at the store, you have an expiration date on. You look at the expiration date and you think, So what do you do next? Take off the lid and you go, still smells pretty good. And then you pour a little bit and you taste it, right?
Or usually if you smell from the top and it doesn't smell so good, then you pour it out, right? Same thing is true with meat or any other kind of thing in the refrigerator. Right? You take off the lid and you say, oh, it's been here about a week. Still smells okay, we'll give it. If it's not smell good, then we'll give it to our dog, right? But that is a test to see whether something is still good or not. And it's very interesting, but the same wording is used in Genesis chapter 22, verse 1, when it says, now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham. The word tested there can mean tried or proved or tested. It is the same idea, and it comes from the word that originally meant to smell out something to see whether it's good. And now God is not looking in heaven and he's smelling out Abraham to see whether he's good. That's not my point. My point is what he is doing in this event is that he is testing Abraham to see whether or not his faith is consistent with what he promised before. If you recall earlier, we had looked at the covenant that God made with Abram. And in chapter 12, he says that he's going to be a great nation. And then we looked at chapter 17 and chapter 18 and how he's going to give him many descendants, even though he hadn't even had a child at that point. And God had promised him the favored child in Isaac. And that through Isaac, his name would be known in all the world. And of course, we know that Isaac fulfilled that promise, but ultimately it came through Christ. We looked at that last time. And so what I want to do is I want to bring us kind of up to speed to where we are in chapter 22. In chapter 21, Isaac is born. He is the faithful promised child. Abraham had another child, Ishmael. It was through a handmaid of Sarah's. But that was not the promised child. Isaac was to be the promised child. And so in their old age, I think Sarah was about 90 and Abraham was about 100. They have a child by the name of Isaac. And of course, they named him Isaac because Isaac means laughter. And Sarah laughed and said, you think I'm going to give birth to a baby at 90 years old? And of course, she did. Now, we have to understand the ages there were a little bit different than our ages. But nonetheless, it says that she was beyond the age of childbearing. And yet God still gave her a promised son through Isaac. Ishmael and Hagar are blessed by God. Ishmael and Hagar were the mother and son of Abraham. And God gave them a great nation and a great promise as well. And now they actually became the forefathers of the Arabs and many of the people of the Middle East today. And then chapter 21, verses 22 through 34, Abraham makes a covenant with Ahimelech and over some land, and they promise to agree to one another. And so that brings us then to chapter 22, verses 1 and 2, which we have the setting of the events today. And so it says in verse 1, now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. Then he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. Now, you have to just pause for a moment and imagine what Abraham was thinking. I mean, here is the promised son, the one who is going to bring in the blessings for the nation, the one who is going to make him exceedingly great. When he looks out in the stars, God said, that's how many children you're going to have. That's how many descendants you're going to have. And he says, go and take that son now and go to the land of Moriah. And Moriah, of course, is one of the hills on which Jerusalem was built. And we'll find in the New Testament that if you were to read about where Solomon built his temple and where the temple was and where the sacrifices were, it was on Mount Moriah. God tells Abraham, says, go to Mount Moriah, take your only begotten son, your only son whom you love, go to that land and offer him there as a sacrifice to me. Doesn't that sound strange? Now, it wouldn't have been that strange for the people around them. We know that there were many nations around Abraham who practiced child sacrifices to their gods as a means of appeasement and as a means of worshiping God. And so it wasn't that out of ordinary for the people around him, but it was out of ordinary for the God of the Bible. And so for Abraham to be asked to do this was something extraordinary. So verse 3, then, we get to this stressful situation where they head out on their journey. Abraham decides he's going to obey God, and he hears this voice, and so he goes. Verse 3, so Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took the two of his young men with him, a couple of his servants, and Isaac his son. He split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place which God had told him to go. Verse 4, then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes, so they were 3 days away from Jerusalem. They traveled that far. Looks up in there, he sees Mount Moriah. Verse 5, and Abraham said to the young men, stay here with the donkey, and the lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. Now, isn't that interesting? Apparently, Abraham knew that somehow God was going to keep his promise that this was going to be the promised son. Now, he didn't know whether he was going to raise up Isaac or whether somehow he was going to prevent the sacrifice from happening. But at this point, he's just obeying God. He realizes that we are going to come back. He tells his servants, he says, the lad and I, we're coming back. Now, I don't know how he knew that they were going to come back other than he knew the character of God and that God would not require this of him otherwise. So verse 6, so Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and the knife, and the two of them went together. And then verse 7, we see this interesting play, dialogue between Isaac, Abraham's son, and Isaac, and Abram, or Abraham. And it says in verse 7, but Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. Then he said, look, the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? And so now I want you to picture for a moment Isaac. And Isaac's going along with his dad, and they're having this outing. They're going to go worship the Lord. You can imagine in this three-day conversation, three-day trip, that they're able to dialogue a lot. His father's discipling his son and probably telling him all the promises and saying, you know, God's going to make a great nation out of you because he promised me that you're going to be the promised child, and we're doing all this stuff, and God's called us to go and worship on this mountain, so we're going to do that. And he puts all this stuff on Isaac. Isaac's climbing up this mountain. On the side of the mountain, he's thinking, no, we got the wood. We've got the fire. We've got everything for the sacrifice, but the sacrifice. Why didn't we bring a lamb with us? So he asks his dad, Dad, where's the sacrifice? And listen to what his father says. And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering. So the two of them went together. And so Abraham, somehow, he's trying to wrap his head around this concept that he is required to offer his son as a sacrifice, but at the same time, God is somehow going to provide a sacrifice for him. And we'll see as we get into a little bit more of the details, Abraham is fully willing to go through with exactly what God had called him to do. So verse 9, then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there, placed wood in order, and he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Now Isaac's probably thinking to himself, hey, Dad, I know you said that God was going to provide a sacrifice, but it doesn't have to be me. I mean, you know, we could have brought one with us. You know, I don't know exactly what's going through his head at this point, but he's thinking, this is not a good thing. How can I be the promised child if I'm going to be sacrificed here? And, you know, I have to just imagine. Sometimes when we're reading text like this, they just give you the facts. You know, it's kind of like, police officer, just the facts, man. And so, you know, the Bible sometimes just gives us the facts. And we have to really get into the emotion of the whole deal. Abraham, as he's tying up his son and putting him on the altar, he's probably weeping. He's probably thinking to himself, do I have to really go through with this? And so, in verse 10, Abraham stretched out his hand, took the knife to slay his son. So he's bound Isaac on the altar. He's put all the wood under it so that he can burn up the offering once he kills it. He takes the knife. I don't know if he's going to stab it, or he takes a knife next to his neck. I'm not sure how he's going to do this, but he's got the knife raised over his son, ready to kill his son as a sacrifice in obedience to God. And then verse 12, or verse 11, the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." So he said, "Here I am." And he said, "Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God." You see what he was trying to do? He was trying to get Abraham to prove his faith. He was trying to get Abraham to bring out the faith that is within him by showing his obedience. So he says, "For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Abraham was proving that he had nothing ahead of God in his relationships. Even this son that he loved, the promised son. So verse 13, "Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, 'The Lord will provide,' Yahweh Yireh. As it is said today, 'In the mount of the Lord it shall be provided.' Then the angel of the Lord called Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, 'By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is in the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gates of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you obeyed my voice.'" Those are the same promises that he gave to Abram earlier. And now he's giving them to Abraham, saying, "This is what I'm going to do because you demonstrated to me that you have the faith necessary for me to bless you." And so I think that there are at least four principles that we can draw from this passage and apply to our own life. And so what we're going to do is look at those real briefly. The first one is that we must obey even if we don't fully understand. We must obey God and obey the scriptures even if we don't fully understand. Abraham couldn't have understood all that was taking place. Now, certainly we have to believe that he had some kind of direct revelation with God that had spoke to him, told him to do these kinds of things. We weren't there. We're just hearing from record what he wrote down as to what actually took place. But we have to believe that he was walking by faith at this point, knowing that God was going to do something incredible. And he wasn't forced or forcing himself to understand everything before he obeyed. And we see other godly men do the same thing. Paul, when it comes to the book of Romans, asks certain questions and then answers those questions. And at some point he gets to the questions and he says, "You know what? We're just not supposed to go beyond that in our questioning. We just have to accept that by faith and know that it's God's will and God's ways." And so it is true for us, and it's true for godly men of the past. If you think about Noah, could Noah fully have understood what was going to happen with the flood? I don't think he did. He was just obeying God. God told him to build an ark. It's going to rain. It's going to flood the world. And so he built an ark according to the specifications God gave him. Did Abram fully know what was going to happen when he took his son up on Mount Moriah and was about ready to sacrifice? He couldn't have. Do we fully know what God is doing when he tells us to rejoice in our sufferings? We can't really know. We don't know all the details of God. Do we know what's going on when a loved one gets hit by a car and dies? We can't understand all that. But we have to walk by faith. We have to understand that God is God and he's working out his will. You know, in the military, the junior officers and those who are enlisted, they take orders and they act upon those orders without really understanding the big picture. You've got the general class of officers and you know, they're looking at the big whole theater of war, and they're looking at all that's going on. They know all the ramifications. They know everything that's going on and what the different companies and battalions and commands are all doing. And then they're giving those orders, and those orders are going down. But the enlisted guy on the field, he doesn't know all that. He's just acting based upon what he's been ordered to do. And that's really the way we need to be. We don't know all that God's doing in the world. We don't know why he's doing certain things that he's doing. We don't know why he's electing certain officials into offices. We don't know why he's doing certain things and sending diseases and plagues and difficulties all across the globe. We don't know all that. But we do know we're supposed to walk by faith. And so he commands us to do that. You might be facing a certain test right now. You might be facing a trial. Maybe it's an illness. Maybe it's a family difficulty, financial struggle, whatever it might be. And you're trying to figure it out. You're trying to figure out what God is doing in the midst of it. Well, maybe God doesn't want you to figure it out. Maybe God just wants you to trust him and to obey, walk by faith. Second principle is, God will not have us do contrary to his character. God will not have us do contrary to his character. It was totally contrary to the nature of God for Abraham to sacrifice his son. Nowhere in the scriptures are we commanded to kill somebody that we love. I mean, that's just crazy. And yet Abraham is having to follow through with this command that God had told him to go and to sacrifice his son. But how is it that Abraham was willing to do that, knowing that he was going to return with his son and go back to the land? How was he able to tell his son, God is going to provide for us a lamb? Because he knew the character of God. And he knew that the character of God was such that he wouldn't ask him to sacrifice his son. And so it's important for us to understand the character of God. Now we know, as I mentioned earlier, that the nations around them sacrificed their children. And unfortunately, it became a practice in Israel as well. Here are just some of the verses. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 21, it says, "And you shall not let any of your descendants pass through the fire to Molech." Molech was the god of the Canaanites. "Nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord." Leviticus 20, verse 2, it says, "Again, you shall say to the children of Israel, whoever of the children of Israel or of the strangers who dwell in Israel who gives any of his descendants to Molech, he shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones." Deuteronomy 12, verse 31 says, "You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way, for every abomination of the Lord which he hates, they have done to their gods, for they burn even the sons and the daughters in the fire to their gods." So this was customary of the people around them. And of course, Deuteronomy, Leviticus, they're written after the events of Abraham's time. They were written about 1,000 years after that time, during the time of Moses. But nonetheless, it was the same character of God that said it then, that is asking Abram to do it now. Deuteronomy 18:10 says, "There shall not be found among you anyone who makes a son or his daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft." And then 2 Kings chapter 16, verse 3. Now we're talking about the people of Israel and what they did. And it says, "But he walked in the way of the king of Israel. Indeed, he made his son pass through the fire, according to the abominations of the nations with whom the Lord had cast out from before the children of Israel." 2 Kings 21, verse 6, it says, "Also he made his son pass through the fire, practicing soothsaying and using witchcraft." 2 Kings 23, verse 10, "And he defied Topheth, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, that no man might make his son or his daughter pass through the fire of Molech." That was Josiah, who he brought reforms to Israel after he'd realized that Israel was conducting worship to Molech just as the nations around them and were sacrificing their children. Josiah comes in as an 8-year-old boy and he makes reforms all over the land of Israel. One of the reforms was, no longer are we going to sacrifice our children to Molech. And so you can see throughout the scriptures, there's this theme in the scriptures that God is a certain character different than the gods around them. And what may be practiced by the heathens around us is not the same thing that God calls his people to do. And so God will not have us do contrary to his character. I did a simple Google search for God told me to. And you'd be surprised what you find on the internet when you do God told me to. There are people who claim that God told them to rape somebody and kill them. There are people who claim that God told them to go into a city and open fire on innocent people. There are people that say that God told them to go into a bank and rob the bank. Well, how do we know these things aren't true? How do we know God didn't really tell them to do that? Because that's contrary to the nature of God. It's contrary to the character of God. God's not like that. And we know that from the scriptures. He's not going to tell us to do something contrary to his character. He will also provide a way. I was going to read a couple of these, but Joanna in her better judgment told me that some of them are too graphic to read in Sunday morning. So if you want to read them, just do a search for God told me to on the internet, and you'd be able to read them. We must know our God so that we can know his character, his nature, so that when we hear somebody say, oh, well, you should just do this, that we don't just do this without thinking about what it is that we're supposed to be doing by God's standard and by God's way. You know, I have seen this even in the churches sometimes on a littler scale. Obviously, there's very few church-going people that say that they're supposed to go and rape their neighbor because God told them to. But it happens on a smaller scale, to less extent. There was an argument several years back in the Southern Baptist Convention on whether or not to ordain women to be preachers. And there were some who were saying, well, God called me to be a preacher. How can God call me to be a preacher and then not be allowed to do that? And then there were the other side that said, well, scriptures say that preachers are to be men. So how can you call a female to be a preacher? It's contrary to the nature of God, contrary to his word. And so there was this huge division, huge controversy in the scriptures or in the Southern Baptist Convention about it. One was saying, well, I had this experience. And the other was saying, well, we're weighing your experience according to the word of God. Now I'll let you decide which one I think is right. It's the one who are weighing the word against all things. You see, sometimes we can have a voice in our head. We were talking about that in Sunday school. A voice in our head that says, well, maybe you should do this. We need to weigh that against the scriptures and say, well, is that really what God wants me to do? Or is that just my bad pizza I had the night before telling me to do that? It's important for us to know the will and the character of God so that when we are asked to do something, we can weigh it against the scripture and live according to God's standards. Number three, God will provide for what he asks us to do. God will provide for what he asks us to do. Because he will not ask us to do something contrary to his character, he will provide a way for us to do things according to his character. Just as Abraham here, yes, he was called to go and do something extraordinary, but he was not asked to follow through with it. God intervened and said, no, don't do that. Here's my provision for you as a sacrifice and as an offering. And the same thing is true with us. God will not ask us to do something contrary to our character, contrary to his character, because he will always provide a way of escape. He will always provide a way for us so that we might be able to manage whatever the challenge is. Nothing is too difficult for God. He'll always provide for us. Genesis chapter 18, verse 14, again, talking about Abraham and Sarah giving birth to a child at their old age. It says, is anything too hard for the Lord? And then the same words are repeated with Mary when the angel comes and talks to Mary and says, you're going to give birth to a baby. And she says, how can this be? I've never known a man. And what does the angel says? Says, with men, this is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God. Now, would a father ask his child to take out the trash without also not giving him a place to take the trash to? Of course not. Would a mother tell the baby to drink and not give it milk? No. And so God would not call us to do something that he would also not give us a means of being able to do it. He would not also give us a provision. We think about this with reference to sin. Some people have said, well, you know, I had no choice. Couldn't help it. There was no other options. Well, listen to what it says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13. It says, no temptation has overtaken you as such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. You see, God will always provide us with the means of dealing with the situation according to His character, so that we do not violate His will, violate His character, but we get the will of His done. That's the way nature and character of God. He will not ask us to train our children and then not give us the resources and the ability to do it. So I've sometimes heard people say to me when we tell them that we homeschool our kids, they say, oh, I could never do that. And I want to respond back to them and say, I could never not homeschool. I mean, God gave us the possibility and the ability as parents to parent our children. And I just consider that part of parenting our children. And so God gives us the ability that He calls us to do. I think also of, He will not ask us to contribute to the church when He does not also give us the means to be able to do that. He will not ask us to bear fruit without giving us the Spirit that enables us to bear that fruit. He will always provide a way for us to do His will. And then number four, tested faith brings about blessing. Tested faith brings about blessing. In the case with Abraham, his faith was tested in that he demonstrated that he was willing to obey God no matter what was asked of him. And he passed the test. It says, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And as a result, the covenant promise that he had given to Abraham was repeated. And he says, now I know for sure that I'll be able to do these things because you have shown and demonstrated this faith. Now, the interesting thing about it is his faith was not something that Abraham mustered up himself. God had first chosen him out of the nation. God had chosen him, given him grace, shown favor to him. And then he demonstrates his faith in response to God's grace in his life. James chapter 1, verses 2 and 4 says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. This is often the case when there's a passing of a certain test that there's blessings to follow. Some of you can probably remember back to school days when you took tests and how great a joy there was when you passed the test, especially at the end of the year and you got your final report card. You know, you realize you passed the grade, right? Pass the test, you went on to the next grade. Or what about a graduation when you finally got that, finally passed the last test of the school year and you were able to say, I'm done. And, you're able to finally finish up. And, we have tests throughout life, whether they be academic, whether they be financial, whether they be in our workplace, whether they be spiritual, where we are asked to pass a certain test. And when we pass that test, blessings are on the other end. And the same thing was true with Abraham. When he passed the test, there was blessings to follow. You know, there's a part of the movie Courageous. I don't know how many of y'all have seen the movie Courageous. It's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, you really need to watch it. But there's a part of the movie, I'm not going to give it all away, but there was a Hispanic guy there who was out of work, and he was trying to find some work here and there. And he finally got the possibility of getting this warehouse job, and he interviewed with it and applied for it and all these kinds of things. Looked like he was going to get it, but they wanted to test his character. And so what they did is they put him through this test to see whether or not he was going to fudge the books a little bit and not show some of the warehouse items going through that really did go through. And they told him a day to think about it, because he says, if he can't do this, then, he really can't work here. And so he went home and thought about it. And of course, he comes back saying, I can't work here. I'm not going to fudge the book. So I got to be honest and then, show integrity and this kind of stuff. And of course, they were testing. They gave him the job, realized he was perfect for it and all this kind of stuff. What happened? Well, he was blessed because he was obedient. He passed the test. And as a result of that, he was obedient. And so the same thing is true in our lives as well. So it holds true spiritually. When we pass the spiritual test, the results are blessing. We will be tested in our faith. It is a test in our faith that produces character and builds faith. And so we must rejoice when we suffer tribulation, when we suffer trials, when we suffer testing of our faith, because we know that on the other end, light is at the end of the tunnel, and the blessings are to follow. So let's summarize. We must obey God if we do not understand, even if we don't understand why. God will not have us do anything contrary to his character, so we must know him and his character so that we can discern good from evil. And then God will provide for what he calls us to do, so we need not lack of fear, or we need not fear any lack. And then tested faith brings about blessings so that we should rejoice when our faith is tested. But there's one more thing that I think that this passage teaches us that is a beautiful picture. And it teaches us the gospel. Because if you think about it, Abraham was going to a mountain to sacrifice his only son. And when he gets there, God provides a lamb as a substitute sacrifice. And with Abraham's faith acted upon it, he's blessed. What does that sound like? 2,400 years later, God sends his son, his only begotten son, his son whom he loves. He sends him as a lamb, provided for us as that perfect substitutionary sacrifice. Sends him to Mount Calvary, where in Jerusalem he is sacrificed as the lamb and pays the penalty that we owed. So that when we, in faith, act upon that promise, we're able to be blessed with eternal life. Let's pray.
And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy? Only for the cause of Christ, I want to leave a legacy of a servant who believed that the world would still be changed by just